The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The SEC does something right for once, and we check in with the Tigers and the Warriors. It's Wednesday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton.
Welcome in here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, right here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and that Radio Alabama app. Hope you're having a good one here on this kind of cloudy, a little bit sunny. And again, it's 2-4. You don't know what you're going to get with the weather, but we know what you're going to get right here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Tripp Upton here, hosting the first segment of today, and I introduce the man sitting across from me that may or may not have just sprinted into the studio, Mr. Christian Griffin, today. I know it's been busy on your end, partner, getting ready for toe meets leather and some Friday night lights, both teams on the road this week, so that means your prep's got to start a little bit earlier because you got to account for drive time.
Yeah, it definitely does, man. Happy Wednesday. Appreciate you for getting everything started. Some plans changed just a little bit. Had to move some stuff around and actually just finished up our interview with the head man of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors, Coach Jacob Osmond. And so we'll be able to play that for you, as you mentioned, partner, here in just a few moments. And appreciate him for being able to move the schedule around because, gosh, it feels like things are ever-changing. Even when you get into the high school football season, things continue to change. But a whole lot to dive into today. As you mentioned, we get to talk with both head coaches of the Warriors and the Tigers. Coach Jacob Osmond coming up here in just a few moments. Coach Keith Etheridge of the Auburn High Tigers will join us live at 2:30. And then we'll be able to talk about in those interviews as well as to end hour number one. Mentioned the games this weekend. You mentioned both on the road. For the first time and probably the only time this season, I get to say that my road trip is shorter than yours.
Yes.
And so ours is all of about 20 minutes. Yours is all of about 3.5 hours. So you'll be able to tell me how that trip goes. And then that will be foreshadowing for the remainder of my road trips this season.
Sure. But the only thing that maybe I would have the advantage of is that when I go on my road trip, I drive until I see the beach. When you drive, you just drive until you see the Tennessee State line.
I drive until I see Canada.
I mean, that's effectively what you're having to do, but you know, we're excited. It's one of the like 3 weeks that we're going to get to take the Jamarinto from the station because again, even if it was like, "Hey, you're heading to Dothan. You're heading to Montgomery." Madison Academy and, you know, all of the other Huntsville schools that Lee Scott has been, as the geniuses at the AHSA did, paired with, despite the school 45 minutes away from them not being in their region. But I know that you and Coach Oz will break down that game and that situation from Friday night. Just absolutely, I mean, I've said it on there, it's absurd. But, it's going to be an exciting Friday for both, and we'll be able to bring you all the coverage for both Auburn High and Lee Scott, as well as right here on ESPN 106.7.
Yeah, it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Again, Wings 94.3, AU 100.3, where you need to be on Friday nights. And, yes, we're hopeful to play 48 minutes of football here on Friday night. Again, we'll dive into a little bit of it. I didn't ask Coach Oz again. I don't necessarily care to dive into that, not even necessarily drama, but – it was a dramatic end because, yes, Glenwood basically got three drives. Lee Scott Academy got two. Lee Scott Academy coming off of I believe it was anywhere from a 16 to an 18 play drive where a short yardage field goal was missed. Glenwood got the football back. And again, that was Lee Scott got the ball with like 2 minutes left in the first quarter. drove down and till about the 5 minute mark of the second quarter, and Glenwood got the football and they got a first down, and then it was canned and we sat there for 2.5 hours waiting for the lightning delay, the weather delay, and never ended up picking up. And so per AHSAA rules, that game was concluded as a 7-0 Glenwood victory, which I know makes a lot of fans really happy, I will say sarcastically. And man, the biggest part about it is the frustrations for not only Coach Jacob Osmond, who it was his first ever game as the head coach, which he will talk about, but as well having to look to the seniors and basically say, yeah, that's going to be the last time you see your rival Glenwood Gators on the football field, a team that you have played against since you basically came out of the womb, because that's what that rivalry means. Yeah. in East Alabama for the lower classifications, whether that was the AISA, whether that was the 3A AHSAA, now 2A private. That's a very, very big game, and unfortunate that Mother Nature made the joke, gave us the free trial rather than the premium subscription of what high school football is on Friday nights. And so at least Scott gets back on the road, taking on the Indians of Lochapoca. Yeah, hopefully we'll play all four quarters and be able to hear a final horn.
That would be very nice. And for all that, the new Alabama Sports Writers Association poll came out this morning. I was looking at it to fire myself up for the show. Lochapoca, a top 10 1A team.
Yeah.
Florida, I'd have to look at the Florida rankings. Glenwood in your region got votes. They got 13 votes, 13 top five, or points rather, in the top poll. So good for them, I guess. Auburn falls to number 6 behind Thompson, obviously. Vestavia Hills at number 2. Shocking, but they played a really good game against Parker. Phoenix City, 0-1. Opelika, who's yet to play a football game yet, so I guess that means you get a free top 4 over Hewitt Trustful, number 5. I think Hewitt should be the number 2 team. I think they are phenomenal. Hoover at number 6, tied with Auburn. Actually, Auburn is number 7. It has a typo on here. So Auburn falls to number 7 in Class 6A. So if you want to fire yourself up, we'll have to be able to do that here today.
Yeah, we will be able to do that here. Phone lines are going to be closed for a majority of the show. Again, with the first hour being full high school coverage. In hour number 2, it will open up from 3 to 3:30 because, again, we have our look around the state, but things look a little bit different. I had some plans, again, can continuously change in the high school landscape and the college landscape as well. And so Had to give a little bit of an audible on talking with another head coach, but how perfect is it that Auburn and Alabama decided to give the fans some news? And so our look around the state will be a little bit different, but it will be a little bit closer to home. We'll be able to talk about that in hour number 2, as well as round of applause, I guess. The SEC followed the Big Ten, as well as many others have now done, making it to where any players that have signed professional contracts will not be allowed to return to the college game. Who would have thought that 10 years ago that would be a headline? Yet that's where we are. Former professionals will not be able to return to college football or college basketball or college baseball.
They have a graphic on the screen that says the Big Ten, the SEC ban NFL players. ACC, Big 12, and Notre Dame expected to make similar decisions. Good for Notre Dame for having to vote to ban this instead of just going, yeah, let's just not.
We'll let the conference speak on itself. We'll take our own publicity from it.
Maybe UConn needs some NFL players. They just put out some new uniforms today. They're like the red Husky Eye uniforms. They look so sick.
The wild thing about it is the other four power conferences could vote this. What if Notre Dame did not and everybody went to Notre Dame? How wild would that be? Just a thought.
The Sun Belt, though, they have voted. And they just showed a tweet from Adam Schefter, breaking news on the show, that the NFL, if you go back to college and attempt to go play in college, you are prohibited from rejoining the NFL that year.
I think that was what we talked about yesterday on Brendan Sorsby not being able to be draft eligible in 26. He's going to have to wait until 27. I don't know if that was off air. Maybe after the show we talked a little bit about it. But essentially, yeah, we were like, okay, well, if college isn't going to do anything, the NFL needs to make that sort of restriction. And you see the professionalism in which the NFL has handled both of these situations, both with Sorsby and now with players in the transfer portal while playing in preseason games. They sat there and said, No, it's okay. You can now wait. We don't want you to be a part of our programs right now. And so you see what happens when there's actual structure rather than the individual conferences having to come out and speak for the NCAA because the NCAA has no power. But a lot of that coming up here in hour number two. Again, the phone lines closed for the first hour. They'll be opened again from 3 to 3:30. And then we move some more things around. And we have Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 joining us at 3:30 here today. It's been a while since we've made our way up to Athens, Georgia, and got all of our updates from what Kirby Smart and this football team are doing throughout fall camp, as well as they work their way towards the start of the college football season. So that's the overall rundown for this afternoon. Again, the phone lines are closed, but the text box, the Send Medicine text box, is always open, which you can always be a part of at 334-784-1685. Again, that number, 334-784-1OTL. And the text box is brought to you by Send Medicine. Because at Send Medicine, you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With over 20 years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Sen is bringing personalized, access-driven healthcare to the Plains. You can find out more and you can become a member today by visiting SenMedicine.com. That's SENNMedicine.com. Regardless of your stage of life, man, he's got something that he can work out for you. He will take care of you the same way that he takes care of us. Appreciate all that he does for ESPN 106.7 as well as our high school coverage. And we'll take a break here in just a few moments, just so that way we can get everything set up for the high school side of things. But yes, Lee Scott Academy last weekend taking on the Glenwood Gators. We've made the jokes again, only 18 minutes of football played in Lee Scott Academy. Thankfully, I guess the one pro is that is a non-region game. And so you can take that. Yes.
You know, I bet you on it, like it's just the amount of time you played. So you played a full quarter in like 3 minutes.
We played a full quarter and then we played about 6 minutes.
Oh, forget it's 12 minutes, not 15 minutes in high school. Yeah. So, hey, who knows, maybe you and Coach Osmond will be able to talk longer than the actual game was.
I believe it was close. I do.
Which
fact,
is crazy to say.
Oh, that would have been fantastic. Again, we had to move stuff around. So I just finished up that conversation. That would have been fantastic if I talked to him for 18 and a half minutes and we said, all right, coach, well, we officially talked longer than your first ever game was.
Yep. And, you know, maybe
then
instead
the painful laugh.
Yeah, the painful laugh. I mean, I could talk to Coach Etheridge for as many minutes that we were in weather delay and you probably would get a show and a half. So,
yeah. Wild still the concept that you were able to continue that. What is that's because of the
because we so I've been told that Auburn was able to get a meteorologist on site
to basically sit there and look at
Ashley Gann, who does stuff with the university. They were able to get her on site, and if you it's just like what happened with the regionals, where if you have a meteorologist on site that can say, I will basically, it shrinks not only the time you have to wait, but also the distance around the stadium where it
shrinks that circle of like the 8 mile radius.
Yes,
or whatever.
It shrinks it down to like one or two. And it's
okay.
If there's none in this, we're good. And I will monitor it actively during the game. So unfortunately, she couldn't be in two places at once, or else they'd probably be up in Academy Drive as well. Or even in Lochapoca, who they had a massive delay. But just crazy what the weather and pressure changes and all the physics that go behind that can impact our daily lives and our livelihood with high school athletics.
Weather. Nothing quite like it. The one good thing about basketball season is you know that the games are going to be played rather than football and baseball. You just have to sit and hope that everything works its way into fruition. And who would have known? There's possible rain in the forecast for Friday. But we'll get there when we get there. Call me Mr. Incredible, because we'll get there when we get there.
Great movie.
Fantastic movie. Fantastic quote in there as well. But we will take an early break here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. When we come back, my interview with the head man of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors, Coach Jacob Osment, again, sitting down, talking about last Friday, talking about the adversity that this team had to overcome quite early on and in different types of adversity, but how he is using that, how the coaching staff is using that to a positive, and how quite literally you never know when the last play of your game is going to be. All of that coming up here when we continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
We waited all offseason for football to come back, and apparently we only paid for the 18-minute package. Friday night's opener between Lee Scott Academy and Glenwood ultimately came to an early end thanks to Mother Nature, with the Warriors ultimately handed a 7-0 loss. Certainly not the beginning that anybody envisioned, but now comes the response. What do those 18 minutes tell us? How did this team handle that adversity, and how quickly can you turn the page to another rivalry waiting here on Friday nights? This week, Lee Scott Academy heads just down the road to take on the Indians of Coach Apoka. And to break it all down, we're joined yet again by the head coach of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors, Coach Jacob Osmond. Coach, appreciate your time as always.
Thank you for having us as always. And again, thank you for the coverage and everything that you do for our guys, really, and all of our athletes on campus.
Well, Coach, we spent all offseason waiting for football, and we finally get to Friday night, and Mother Nature decides that we get the free trial rather than the premium version of high school football. You've had now a couple of days to process everything that happened, and not necessarily asking you to dive into the raw emotions, but now that you've had a couple of days to react and now to respond to everything, what are some of the emotions that Friday night is going to teach your team about this year?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that we told our guys is that it was incredibly, I hate to use the word unprecedented, but just speaking with the officials association that we have, speaking with Coach Bedsall, with the AHSAA, with Coach Daniel as the director of private schools, both athletic directors, coaches, everybody involved, we just came to really just kind of a unfortunate ending. But, you know, it was one of those things that I just told our guys that we got to move forward without speculation and what ifs, and focus on our next opponent. So, you know, they always tell you that you never forget your first game. And I can honestly say I probably will not forget my first game as a head coach, to say the least. But our guys have done a great job just turning the page, moving on. I mean, if there's anything our guys have dealt with, it has been some sudden and abrupt change just in the amount of time that we've been together as a team this year. So, nothing that they haven't, you know, dealt with from a, dare I say, adversity standpoint, but just ready to move forward and keep going and Lord willing, get four quarters of football in.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the word adversity. Obviously, you don't want it to hit quite like that, but this has been something that every coach preaches, and you especially. Adversity is something, again, we spent a whole lot of time talking about in that offseason. What did you learn about the way your players handled the situation that was completely outside their control?
You know, I mean, they were upset. They were disappointed. I had one of the seniors ask me, after we informed them late Friday night, they just said, you know, so that's the last time I get to play Glenwood in football. And I said, it's really unfortunate that I have to say yes. But, you know, I mean, I think they understood the decision that had to be made. And, you know, they've given us every ounce of focus that we've asked. We still were able to you know, meet as a coaching staff over the weekend, and then brought the guys in Monday to, you know, kind of go over some points that we want to correct, because, you know, I mean, as every coach that you'll talk to will say, the goal is to have exponentially great growth from game one to game two. And now we've got a smaller sample size of things that we've got to get corrected. So really making sure that we focus on still our identity as a team, what we want to do that makes us successful as a team. And then moving forward, looking at how we can translate that into preparation for Loach Apoka. And they've done everything we've asked them to do.
Coach Jacob Osmond here with us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Coach, as always, appreciate your time. And this is something as a head coach, it feels almost a little bit like a balancing act. You don't want your guys to just shrug something off like this that hurts, but at some point you want to be able to turn that page and make sure that one Friday night doesn't affect the next one. You mentioned they've answered the call. They've done what they've needed to do. Any specific moments on how they've handled that kind of adversity and how they've been able to turn the page?
Yeah, I mean, we tell our guys a lot of times, you know, that once a play is gone, a play is gone, and you can only focus on the thing that's in front of you next. And, you know, it's a hot coaching topic that, you know, we can only control what we can control. And there's absolutely nothing that we can do about last week's game and last week's outcome. But what we can have now is tangible evidence of that there is nothing we can do about that outcome, and that we've got to focus ahead. And now you take that down to a smaller scale of good play or bad play heading into this week, it's time for the next play. Spot the ball and let's run it again. So just really asking our guys to do whatever's necessary and focusing one play to the next. And so that we can hopefully, when we say as a senior, wow, is this it for me playing Lochapoca? Hopefully they actually can now recognize that there is no telling when your last play may actually be. And we actually have some evidence for that now. So it's not just coach speak to, you know, a group of teenagers now, but there is some reality to it and some perspective that, as far as I know, only two teams this past week really get to kind of express.
Coach, I know we talked a little bit late Friday night about the way that those first 18 minutes were played. I want to start on the positive side of things. Again, a quarter and a half of football, basically three drives versus two drives. And despite all of those mistakes, you still felt as if, man, the rest of the contest was going to be exactly what you needed to see from your team. When you go back and you look at those 18 minutes, what did you see from your team that you really liked?
Yeah, one thing we challenged our guys with early on, the past two times we played Glenwood, we haven't done a great job with our ball security early, and giving them another shot at the ball early on has definitely put us behind the past two times we played them. It just so happens this time when we've played them, we actually get the ball back relatively quick with Brooks getting the interception off of Jack's tip. And so that obviously is one of those things that can help you translate a lot of momentum. But you know, one thing, you know, just some high points, man. We had one drive where we had, I mean, I think there were two penalties in the drive, but I think we had an 18 play drive. And I think, you know, we saw where some fatigue maybe came in and we just couldn't punch it in, and you miss a field goal a little bit to the left. And, you know, and unfortunately it's one of those things that you have to learn from and kind of build on. That was actually a major focus point yesterday in practice. That was, you know, all right, we're tired. Can we still punch it in? And just trying to give our guys as many situations that we can replicate. So yesterday in practice, I moved a break to a different spot without telling the guys where they've been used to it. And so they're kind of looking around, you know, hey, don't we normally have a break right here? And I've kind of coined a phrase that a lot of this game is mental warfare. So making sure that we can still lock ourselves in mentally and, you know, yes, we're tired, but do it tired, and do it tired to the 100% of whatever you've got. And challenging our guys that way, because there is a lot of mental warfare that goes with a game like this, especially when you're at a school that, you know, you don't have a ton of depth and everybody's playing both ways. But Coach Hall would say the same thing, and Coach Nelson would say the same thing. You know, there's a lot of schools that have guys that play both ways, and you can either make an excuse or you can make a way to fix it. And so we're going to do whatever's necessary to give our guys as many in-game scenarios that we can try to replicate, because it's difficult to replicate in-game. But if we can replicate as much mental stress as we possibly can, the game should just flow naturally. So, you know, had a great drive. You know, defensively, I liked where we were. Coach Speakman had a great plan. And there, you know, there's a busted coverage, and that's going to happen in week one for sure. But, you know, things that are very correctable, and we were able to get it, you know, fixed immediately on Monday. So just being able to take the things that, you know, that smaller sample size that we can build on. But I thought we were moving the ball pretty well. You know, I liked the chances that we had coming out for the second half getting the ball. But like I said, there's really nothing to do with speculation now, because hindsight's 20/20. But there's a lot that we could take from that game to carry some momentum heading into Lochapoca.
You mentioned earlier, just a few moments ago, that every coach talks about sometimes the biggest jump you make all season is from week one to week two. In those 18 minutes, obviously, there was a little bit of exposure given to the defensive and the offensive side of the football, for that matter. What's some of the things that you've really challenged your team to clean up going into week two?
Yeah, so you want to, like we said, you want to make sure that you're continuously working on your identity, you know, early on, especially before you hit region play. But at the same time, you want to make sure that while you're working on that, it's beneficial to taking you to your next opponent as well. So when you see a team with like Lochapoca, who's got a ton of speed on the edge, one thing that we really worked hard on this week was making sure our pass protection was sound. You know, making sure that our guys' communication was great, because it's a very difficult sport to be successful at with minimal communication. And if it is communication, it's got to be effective communication. So continuing to have a ton of these younger guys that that still haven't played a full varsity game yet. You know, having those guys work this week on continuing to learn how to be vocal, trusting each other, whether that's following a guy on buck sweep, or whether that's making sure that you're trusting, you know, you've got your back half or your back third in a certain coverage call. That, you know, that's difficult to do when your first time, you know, live isn't a big game like it was. So just, you know, reminding our guys that the game is not too big and you're not too small, and that it is still football and it's still 11-on-11. So, you know, just continuing to shore up all of the things that we want to have as we hit region play, and making sure that it is something that's catered towards the opponent, which this week is Lochapoca.
Yes, sir. You mentioned Lo Chiapoca. We have Coach Jacob Osmond here with us on the phone lines for the Wednesday edition of On the Line. This one has a little bit of a different feel. Lo Chiapoca right down the road. It's only the third meeting between these two schools, and Lee Scott Academy has come out victorious in the first two. Is this starting to be a little bit of a crosstown rivalry from your perspective in the way that these the players have handled it?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if the word rivalry, I guess we could use it, but I know our guys look forward to this game. Every year we've played them. Coach Hall does a great job over there with his guys, and he's kind of in the same boat as us. You know, when you talk about depth and you talk about player personnel, I mean, he's done a fantastic job, and he's got a great team over there. They play hard, they play fast, and they beat a very good Lynette team this past week. So, you know, it's fun because it is a road game, but you know, for some of our families, it may actually be closer to their home than Judd Scott. So,
and it's one they can actually make it out to.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, it's relatively closer than some of the other road games we've got this year. So I think our guys just love the opportunity. They've got an incredible environment, you know, when they host you. So we're really looking forward to getting to go do that. And hopefully, you know, you're, like I said, you're on the road, but there is still a little bit of a home feel just with it being so close to town.
You mentioned the personnel and the scheme that Lo Chiapoca puts on the field. What are some of the things that brings you a little bit of concern, and how has Lee Scott been able to challenge what Lo Chiapoca is wanting to do on the field to try and bring the Warriors success?
Yeah, for sure. So the big thing that we just kind of emphasized, and it happens to be Lo Chiapoca, but we want to make sure that we're tackling well. That was one thing that, you know, that you can obviously see, and you're probably going to see all the time in your first game, that you want to make sure that you're tackling well. And then we did a good job handling the football. So I think making sure that we remember that the ball is absolutely the program, that we can take care of the football, and that we get as many takeaways as we can. And then capitalizing in all facets of the game. So making sure that you know, everybody's doing their job, especially on special teams as well, because, you know, there's a lot of times where one or two big plays on a special teams play can really control a lot of momentum. And then just reminding our guys that it is just one play at a time. We can't let momentum outside of the fence. We can't let anything that's outside of our control have any kind of influence on what we're trying to do with our game plan in all three facets of it.
Finally, Coach, again, we got to let you get out of here, but the way week one ended, you finally get another Friday night, another opportunity, hopefully a full 48-minute opportunity. If you answered the blank of Lee Scott Academy wins on Friday night, if, what stands out to you?
Lee Scott Academy wins on Friday if they fully commit to each other as a team. I think if we can continue to grow together as a team and we fully commit to what we're trying to do, whether that's trusting our coaches and committing to the game plan that we have on all sides of the football, if we commit to our assignments, reading our keys, I think we'll be successful. If we commit to taking care of the football, taking the football away, I like our chances to be successful Friday.
Lee Scott Academy, Lo Chiapoca, Friday night pregame gets it started over on AU 100.3 with kickoff at 7. Again, you can join in AU 100.3, auhits.com, that Radio Alabama app, the YouTube and Facebook live stream. We'll be up and rolling as well. Coach, we greatly appreciate your time. Looking forward to a fun one on Friday night, regardless of how many minutes we get to play.
Sounds like a plan. We're going to hope for 48, though.
The head man, Coach Jacob Osmond, taking some time to visit with us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Again, the Lee Scott Academy Warriors taking on the Lo Chiapoca Indians on Friday night. You know where to be, AU 100.3, starting at 6 p.m. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll flip to the other side of town as Tripp Upton sits down with the head man for the Auburn High Tigers, Coach Keith Etheridge. All of that and more as we continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Great catching up, Christian and Coach Jacob Osment, getting you ready for the Lee Scott Warriors to head up Wire Road out to Lochapoca to take on the Indians. And speaking of another school in town taking on the Indians, we have the head man of the Auburn High Tigers, Coach Keith Etheridge, here with us. Coach, I know you got your head down to Florida. We talked a little bit earlier today about y'all leaving early in the morning. Are you going to be able to get some tanning time in down on the beaches?
Probably not. Wife may be able to, but not me.
Hey, you know what, Coach? I don't think you need it. I think you look great as is in your Auburn Tiger blue. Yes, sir. So,
not much time for that stuff right now.
Yes, sir, Coach. So we start here on Friday with the game. Auburn falls to Hewitt Trustful 56-42. A lot of weather shenanigans going on. And, Coach, I just want you to take us through your process from triple zeros after the end of that game to today. What have you been able to work on, compartmentalize that game, and get ready for this Friday?
Just sort of tell our kids, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it doesn't affect us as far as region play, anything like that. You know, and sort of highlight the mistakes we made and how ways we could have, you know, came out of there with a win. You know, we turned the ball over four times. You know, we missed a lot of tackles. We had some pre-snap penalties. There's a lot of things that we missed, some opportunities on some turnovers, you know, that we had some picks and we didn't capitalize on those, you know. So we missed some opportunities and hats off to you at Trustwood. You know, they made plays when they need to. And I thought we played really – we had 480 yards of offense, you know. Kaysen was 22 for 29, you know, passing for 288 yards and some touchdowns. And then also rushed for 66 yards, so he had over – and a touchdown. So he had over 350 yards of offense. And, you know, we had some bright spots. I thought J.J. King played great. Definitely, you know, Quez Johnson had a really good game.
Oh, yeah.
I thought some guys really stepped up and played well the other night. You know, we've just got to tackle better and do the little things better. So we came in Sunday. We watched some film. We had to work out a little bit on Sunday to get the soreness out. And then Monday and got after it pretty good Monday and Tuesday. Then have our Wednesday morning practice, then Thursday morning walk through, and just getting ready to, you know, load those buses and head south to Florida.
You know, Coach, and I think that it's such a benefit to play teams like Hewitt Trustful, teams like Choctahatchee early in the season and get you ready for that tough region play. Region 2 is one of the hardest regions in the state of Alabama. You have, you know, Opelika, Carver, Central Phoenix City, Enterprise, Dothan, all are very solid teams. And, you know, having these type of games, what have you seen through the past couple of years that these kind of games teach you about your team?
Yeah, you want to play tough teams, and there's no I don't think we get nothing out of going and playing teams that, you know, you're supposed to beat. You know, we want to play top 10 teams. You know, I don't think any team on our schedule is ranked out of the top 10, you know, unless it's a region game that we have to play. But, you know, we got Saraland on the schedule, we got Choctahatchee on the schedule, we got Hewitt Trustful on the schedule. So all those teams are top 10 ranked teams. They're great football teams. They have great athletes. And that's what we're going to see when we get to region play. So we want to prepare ourselves for that. And when we get to the playoffs, you know, I mean, you know, you take Central and Thompson played the first game. You know, I mean, that's two of the top teams in the state. They decide they want to play the first game. You know, us and Hewitt, you know, two top 10 teams, we want to play. You know, we want to see what you got coming out of the gate. And when you play really good teams, not only do you get to see what you have, but you get to see, you know, your weaknesses too, because really good teams are going to show weaknesses. They're going to show you what you're weak at, and you get to work on those things and get them corrected before you get to region play.
We're talking with the head man of the Auburn High Tigers, Coach Keith Etheridge, as the Tigers head down to Fort Walton Beach to play Choctahatchee. And, Coach, looking ahead at this Big Green Indian team, they are athletic. They are well, you know, they have some good coaching, and they play as well in a tough area of the country. Talk to me a little bit about what you've seen that you guys have got to be able and careful for this Friday.
Yeah, they bring a lot of pressure. You know, their defense is based on pressure, so they really get after you defensively. They're fast, they're physical. You know, defensively, they got a lot of athletes over on that side of the ball. Their front's really good, long, you know, strong front. And on the offensive side, their quarterback makes them go. He's a kid who can run it and throw it, of course. And they've got a running back who's one of the better ones I've seen. He's really good, you know, really talented kid. So we're going to have to find him, make sure we get him to the ground. You know, we didn't tackle great last week. So, you know, a lot of times your biggest improvements from game one to game two, and we're hoping to see that this week, you know, because they've got receivers who will absolutely go get it. You know, they're your common athletic Florida team. You know, they can go – they can make big plays really fast. They're really good in the kicking, the return game, you know. So we've got to make sure that we find those athletes.
Coach, I want to ask you a little bit about your linebacker room. I think that it's going to be so important this week, having a mobile quarterback, having a good running game where those guys need to step up. And you look at – you lost a little bit last season. Guys like Greg Williams and Will Lee left the program, graduated into the college ranks. And you have a lot of experienced guys, but guys that maybe a lot of Auburn fans need to tap into if they're a big fan of this team. Talk to me about what you need from this linebacker group and the names to watch out from that group that are going to make a big impact this Friday.
Well, you got to think about it. You lost guys that were 2-year starters, and you know, Gampston, Alex Gampston, and Greg Williams, and Aiden Parker. All those guys are, you know, well, two of those three guys are playing major college football right now. And Gampston, you know, could have been playing college football also, but he was a high academic kid who's at Auburn University right now. So you lost a lot of playing time in those three guys. And we got three guys that are coming in that have played a little bit in the past, but, you know, still need more game experience, you know. So Cam Bowen had 11 tackles the other night, which kind of led us. He did a really good job the other night. I think that, you know, he was one of our bright spots. And, you know, I think that with more time, the other two, Quay Woods, you know, he played well at times. And, you know, he's going to get more time, and he's going to get better and better. You know, he's a junior. And then you got Carter Chamberlain, who's in the middle, who's a kid we know can make plays. And then you'll see Tank come in. He'll play some. So a lot of those guys are have played in the past but haven't played major minutes. So, you know, they're getting their feet wet. They're seeing the speed of the game, and the more they're in there, the more they're gonna acclimate to that speed and the better they're gonna get.
We're talking with the head man of Auburn High football, Coach Keith Etheridge. And Coach, looking at this offense with the running game, I think that, you know, Jaden King had a phenomenal game. Jeremiah Owens, a touchdown and some big snaps as a sophomore. Yeah. Do you want to lean on that a little bit more this Friday night and be able to impose your will on this athletic team with your size that you have up front?
Yeah, I think that, you know, both teams are big up front, so I don't think we have a huge advantage there. I think that we're going to run the football, though. We're going to run the football. We'll definitely get JJ the ball. We'll get Jeremiah the ball. I think Jeremiah had a couple of touchdowns the other night. He played really good as a sophomore. I think that JJ had a really good game. He had over 100 yards of offense, you know, the other night. So he's a threat out of the backfield as a receiver also. So, you know, we've got to get those guys touches, but we've also got to spread it around to our receivers. You know, all of our receivers can make big plays, so we got to get them the ball on the perimeter and give them opportunities to make plays also. Our line played as good as, you know, our offensive line has played since I've been here the other night. I think we blocked really well. Had I think the majority of our offensive line out of all the snaps, you know, you got five offensive linemen, so there's five chances to make a mistake on every play. We had three debts, which is three mistakes. And with all the plays that we had out of those five linemen, there was only three mistakes made, you know, the other night as far as what they were supposed to be doing, you know. So that's phenomenal. You know, I think that Coach Stanford's done an amazing job over there with that offensive line group. And, you know, we had guys grading out 97% the other night, which is astronomical for an offensive lineman. So, you know, I was really pleased with that group. And I think we're going to, you know, we will lean on that group pretty hard this week.
Coach, one last question before we got to get you out of here. The Tigers take on the Chokahatchee Indians this Friday. And, Coach, Auburn High wins if they what?
If we take care of the football. You know, we can't turn the ball over like we did, you know, last week. We have to, you know, limit pre-snap penalties. And we have to play to our ability. We can't give them a 14-point lead and try to fight back. We've got to jump on them quick. We've got to, you know, stay in the ball game and make it whether or not we're having to play from behind. You know, I felt like we played from behind all night the other night. You know, then you got the rain delays and things like that. So, you know, it was kind of a weird night the other night. Hopefully we get away from the rain delays and stuff like that. And we go down there and just play football, pin our ears back, and have a great time.
Head coach of the Auburn High Tigers, Coach Keith Etheridge. Coach, always appreciate your time hopping on the program and being able to preview your game on Friday. As I said earlier, the Tigers will play the Big Green Indians from Joe Etheridge Field in Fort Walton Beach. How funny we were able to talk about earlier about how it's spelled the exact same way you are,
yeah.
All E's. I mean, it might as well be a home game for you, no?
That's right. We'll take it. God bless, Tripp, man. Go Tigers.
Yes, sir. That's head coach of the Auburn High Tigers, Keith Etheridge. Make sure you tune in, Wings 94.3, to catch the Auburn High Tigers taking on the Chokahatchee Indians live from Fort Walton Beach. We'll have Jack Hudden on the call. No Rob Pate this week. He's heading up to watch his daughter play at East Carolina, so happy for Rob. Family always comes first. We got Carson Meyer of a Weagle and Huntington College football. He's going to be joining us on color commentary. I'll be with you on the sidelines talking to Coach Etheridge, as well as your stats, your pregame, your in-game updates, postgame, halftime, jack of all trades. So make sure to catch that Wings 94.3 locally on wingsfm.com and the Radio Alabama app. You can also watch it live on YouTube on the AHS Mass Media account. Come check it out there. This will be the first away game that they've been able to stream with us and our partnership that we have with them. So we're really excited to have that going on for you. We also have Brandon Gergely, going to give him a shout out. He'll be running the controls for us here back in the Wing studio, helping to make sure that everything sounds fantastic. So no matter what you're doing, you need to be at Wings 94.3 or AU 100.3 with Christian, Caleb, and the Lee Scott Warriors. We'll take a break, come back, wrap up the hour, and get into a talk where the SEC might have finally done something good, although they weren't the first to do it. They are the next to ban NFL players from playing college. Imagine having to say you needed to do that 10 years ago. We'll be back right after this on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate both coaches, Coach Jacob Osment of the Lee Scott Warriors and Coach Keith Etheridge of the Auburn High Tigers for taking some time to join us here on the program, get their insights for last Friday's game as well as this Friday's game, because it's a very, very quick turnaround, and Lee Scott especially doesn't have the bye week in the middle of the week that they're used to. It's much more of the schedule that y'all are used to playing, where it's kind of like week 11.
We did the opposite, because we have our bye week at the end of September when y'all play Trinity Presbyterian for your homecoming game, I believe.
Yeah, and so a little bit different, and so even less time to think about last Friday, whether that's good, whether that's bad, or whether that's somewhere in between. You gotta turn the page and immediately turn your focus to the Indians for both squads, whether that's Choctahatchee, whether that's Lochapoca. Really looking forward to this Friday and hopefully having a full contest on the Lee Scott Sports Network.
So I was doing some reading about Choctahatchee. I need to put this somewhere in our pregame as well and let Jack know that, according to their athletic website, they were the ones that invented the rider on the horse, like what Florida State does, that Florida State stole it from Choctahatchee, allegedly.
So, like, they might bring that out onto the field?
Oh, they do it. Apparently, they do it before every game. I don't know. That is alleged. Again, that is what I was – the little bit of research I was doing told me that they invented it, and Florida State took it from them. Bobby Bowden and his wife loved it so much they did it. And I don't know how true that is. I got to do – that might just be some – it might be how the story of how the War Eagle circled the field and –
sure.
It was a Civil War eagle. Like, it might be the same kind of story, but it was that. And then
ours
they have like,
real.
Yeah, ours is real though. And then I think there's like a big totem pole, like right near the press box. It's the big green totem pole. It's like a tradition there. So very cool stuff. It's always fun playing the, you know, for y'all, Lochapoca is a known program here and it is very local, but going to these like Choctahatchee where you're only going to go there once in your life, so you might as well learn as much as you can about them. I think that is just so cool. And the uniqueness that high school football is that kind of stuff. I mean, I know Lee Scott's got traditions. Auburn's got traditions. Every school has traditions, but it's just something different going all the way down there and learning all about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, being able to see how everybody else handles Friday nights is really, really cool. Again, wrapping up our hour of high school coverage here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. In hour number two, we're diving into the SEC and how they finally say no after another program does. But we'll read that statement given by the SEC, what that means for the LSU Tigers, and then we'll take a look around the state as well with Auburn and Alabama not necessarily on the football field. And the phone lines are going to be open for the first 30 minutes of hour number two. But while we have just a moment or two before the music kicks us out of here to wrap up hour number one, we talked about the drama of the SEC and the NFL going back to college, but a name that we haven't quite heard in a little bit of time, at least, is the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Well, news dropped about half an hour ago.
Did he officially commit there?
That Tommy Castellanos has committed to Texas Tech. This is a fifth-year stop, and I guess the differentiating topic of this matter is the fact that he never officially signed an NFL contract.
Yeah, so, which, I mean, if you're going to play by the rules, like, I understand that to that point. I mean, if it was always going to be Texas Tech or LSU. Let's go ahead and say that now. I got to feel bad for Will Hammond, man. He's supposed to be the starter. They bring in Brendan Sorsby. He's supposed to be the starter. They bring in Thomas Castellanos. I mean, just in all, like, I hope that he gets his opportunity. And that guy, he might be the only Texas Tech player that I'm actively rooting for.
Yeah. A wild concept, again.
Definitely won't be Malcolm Simmons.
No, but just a wild concept in itself, the idea that we're less than a week away from week zero starting, and we're still having all sorts of crazy drama. But maybe there will be some resolutions, even if that means that certain head coaches don't agree with it. We'll dive into the current state of the SEC as of this morning, their official statement, as well as what that means for the Bayou Bengals here in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1685. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
The SEC officially releases the statement saying no to players that used to play in professional sports.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Christian Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Happy hump day, everybody. Hope you're doing well as the it at least appears for now that the clouds have cleared, turned into another warm day. It says on my unnamed weather app that it's only 89 degrees, and so I don't think we can officially refer to that as, like, deadly hot, considering what it has been over the last handful of days, handful of weeks. And so can't wait for that false fall to hit where we get a week of low to mid to maybe high 70s, and everybody's like, all right, fall is here. And then next thing you know, you'll wake up, and Monday morning it'll already be 92 degrees, and you'll have to bring an extra change of shirts and underwear just to walk to the mailbox to go grab your mail, because that's what it is here in the South. But appreciate everybody for being here with us, having a good time in the studio. Hour number one was full of our high school coverage. Got to talk with both of the head coaches, Coach Jacob Osmond of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors, Coach Keith Etheridge of the Auburn High Tigers, not only previewing their match from this this Friday night, but also recapping last Friday night in there as well. All of that, again, in hour number one, as it is every single Wednesday from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. But if you ever miss any of it, you want to go back and check out any of the interviews or any of the other content that we have, you can always go out and check it out over at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. See what's going on as the Dogs wrap up fall camp in Athens and how what Kirby Smart had to say about these NFL players trying to come back to college. We'll also just talk about what the SEC has been able to do, what the NFL has been able to do, and them all taking the Big Ten's example and how to be a real organization and a real conference and being able to police your own rules. But phone lines will probably be closed today. We might have them open for the first 30 minutes of the hour.
Can't go back on it now. I promoted it
you're
the
right,
first hour.
You did. My mistake. So first 30 minutes of the hour, go ahead. Give us a call. 334-321-1390. Make your voice heard here on the line. And the Send Medicine text box is open 24-7 at 334-7841-OTL. The text box is brought to you by Send Medicine. At Send Medicine, you get VIP medical care with direct access to your personal physician. With 20-plus years of emergency room experience, Dr. Eric Send is bringing personalized, access-driven health care to the Plains. Become a member today by visiting Send Medicine. That's SENNmedicine.com.
Over on our TV that we have in the studio, watching the Little League World Series, Nevada and Iowa doing battle, tied at zero in the top half of the fourth inning. And with that, a shout out yet again to Phenix City. I feel like that's the one true shout out that we can give, because it's the Little League World Series, for the comeback that they had, continuing their push. And so cool to represent the state of Alabama.
Congratulations to the kids on the team in Phenix City. I cannot give any credit to the town outside of that because of the Red Devils, unfortunately. But congratulations to them. Again, as long as you don't end up Glenwood Gators or Central Phoenix City Red Devils when you're older, I'm fine with that.
I have insight that we may not like any of that. But that's a story for another day if they may plan on wearing orange here in the future. But a conversation for another day. Yes, Jordan Hill of Dogs 24-7, a look around the state, talking Auburn and Alabama and the news that broke this morning. But we start hour number two talking about the SEC and how they released a cute little statement on Monday or Tuesday, and it was basically saying, you know what, we think that players that are playing professional sports, we think it's bad to return to college sports. We don't think that you should do it. And everybody kind of sat around and said, okay, that's a cute statement. Do something about it. Actually make something out of this. And we waited and went to bed, and there was nothing. We woke up the following day, and the Big Ten said, okay, that's cute. Here we go. We'll release the official statement, unanimously voted on, saying that NFL players, WNBA players, NBA players that sign professional contracts will not be allowed to return to the Big Ten. Notice I'm not saying into the NCAA. This was a Big Ten rule initially, into the Big Ten. And everybody said, and we said, okay, it's now time for Greg Sankey. It's time for the SEC to truly decide if the individual and the individual school is going to have more power, or if they're going to try and put a little bit of a cap and put a regulation on this, speaking for all of college sports. And as of this morning, the SEC did draw the rule to stop players from returning from the NFL, the NBA, and the WNBA back to college football. The fact that, or college sports rather, but the fact that Heather Denich is writing this, and that's truly where we sit. I guess it joined on Tuesday, rather, Tuesday evening. It's unanimous opposition to athletes leaving the NFL and returning to college teams swiftly after the Big Ten did, passing a new conference rule that gives the commissioner, Greg Sankey, full authority to enforce it with penalties. We'll get to that penalty here in just a moment, or the penalties, rather. It looks like there's three big ones that the SEC will try and enforce. But with a step-by-step explanation, the SEC announced that its institutions are not permitted to have an athlete on its roster who has a previously declared for the NFL, the NBA, or the WNBA draft and did not appropriately withdraw. We know that you can go test the NBA draft waters. We know that with Janai. We know that with Tahad. We know that with plenty of guys, yet there's a very strict deadline of, okay, this is when you have to withdraw your name. That is not going to be any sort of punishment, because I think that that should be allowed. I think you should be able to explore your options, get to get some insight from some of those NBA camps. But it's basically, okay, I'm going to keep my name in the draft. You know what? I didn't like where I was drafted. I'm going to try and return. B, sign a contract with the NFL or any other professional football league, the NBA, the NBA G League, or the WNBA, or any affiliate team on that side of things. I want to highlight that here in just a moment, so put a pin in that. And C, been listed on an NFL or other professional football league, an NBA or a G League team, or a WNBA true roster. And so this is the statements that the SEC has released. Again, this is now, I guess, officially only with the SEC. And so as of this morning, it was the Big Ten. It was the SEC. We also heard that the Sun Belt is already declared that this will not happen. The ACC is expected to release a statement by the end of today. I don't believe that the Big 12 has officially made any sort of statement. Which, but
that's kind of surprises me, given the hot, not only the Brent Yormark trying to always be the first to do something, and he is like obsessed with that and being the trailblazer, the break it and see what happens kind of commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems like something that he would have been in before. I'm surprised he wasn't the first or second before or after.
Almost trying to point fingers at the Big Ten and the SEC, going, you know what? Well, we're not going to do something like that.
Yeah, exactly. He's so like,
it's like a joint statement from the Big 12 and the ACC just to try and prove their relevance to the other two conferences.
I'm surprised that didn't happen, but nothing as far as I've seen in the Big 12, and I guess Castellanos didn't sign an NFL contract. We talked a little bit about him signing.
Yeah.
I guess that'll be allowed regardless. I'm okay. I can understand that a little bit more than if he was on a preseason roster and trying to come back.
Sure. That was the 5-for-5 that didn't go pro. And so there's at least a little bit of, I hate to use the word leniency, but because we know that you give an inch and everybody takes a mile in today's world. But that's at least a little bit different, just unfortunate with the circumstances and the logo, of course, that thankfully the Red Raiders have not been in any sort of drama throughout the offseason. But yes, the Big 12 and Notre Dame has to be mentioned in there as well, because with Notre Dame not being in a true conference, they technically stand alone. And so they will have to make an official statement as well, whether that's pro, whether that's for. But we heard the rumblings possibly that the SEC didn't have either A, everybody vote, or that not everybody agreed. Heather Dinich says otherwise. I know that social media is kind of rambling on about what that did or did not look like. There are some reports that say that LSU purposely did not vote, and there are a couple others in the SEC that did not vote. But I guess you get to the point of, my vote may not mean anything if we know that the other 13 or 14 schools are going to speak negatively about this. So rather than speaking yes, we're just going to speak nothing.
Yeah, but it's a vote by not voting. I'd love to know. I mean, they're never going to release the full voter rolls and like that Alabama voted yes, Auburn voted yes.
I would love for them. Again, you talk about eliminating gray area. Make everybody vote and show the public who voted for what. Because again, the Big Ten released a statement that it was completely unanimous. There was no drama whatsoever. There was no any sort of conversations on, well, no, it was all voted on no. The SEC, at least according to Heather Dinich in this ESPN article, makes it seem that way. But again, rumblings are and reports are in terms of social media, which thankfully, because it was said on social media, it's 100% accurate. But we've been hearing the rumblings otherwise.
Yeah, the SEC, this is per Brandon Marcello, the SEC presidents voted 15-0 to approve the penalty structure and its new rule banning NFL, NBA, and WNBA players.
Okay, so as of right now,
15-0.
It's now worked its way from what we've heard 13 or 14 to 15-0, and LSU, we have been confirmed that LSU was the team to not vote.
They abstained, so they voted they voted by not voting.
Which, I mean, again, from their standpoint, looking at it from a professional way, you can say, okay, in 5 years, yeah, well, we didn't vote yes. We just didn't vote. But Lane Kiffin's obviously made plenty of remarks. You haven't really heard anything from Will Wade, which is a little bit surprising, or the overall athletic director from LSU and Baton Rouge, or anybody on that standpoint. It's only been Lane Kiffin as of yesterday morning, before this was officially released on the Pat McAfee show, basically saying, yeah, well, the NCAA and the SEC shouldn't be able to pick and choose which rules they like, which rules they didn't like. We're just doing what we need to do, and these players are going to go play for other schools if we don't recruit them, so we're just going to go and try and get them to come to our programs. Well, officially, that statement is no more, as the SEC draws the rule to stop the NFL, NBA, and WNBA players from returning. And real quickly before we get to break, because I do want to be able to talk a little bit about the news that broke for the Iron Bowl of basketball here in just a little bit. That does not say, again, now untaking the pin,
I think you're going to say the same thing I'm going to jokingly say, but you go ahead.
Okay. Untaking the pin from that second spot that I mentioned, where you sign a contract with the NFL or a professional football team, NBA or the NBA G League or the WNBA or affiliate team. This isn't confirmed, and I believe that we are still in a waiting game with the 5 for 5 and the age and stuff like that. But I do not believe that this has any sort of fully ruling on European players in terms of Auburn's football or Auburn's basketball roster this year with Montas as well as Narcisse and Goy. And so we know they're enrolled and they're taking classes at Auburn. And so just, I know that that's been a question that's come to mind of, okay, well, you're talking about professional contracts and professional players. It says nothing about European professionals. And so, for better or for worse, and for better in this topic of conversation, for Auburn and Bruce Pearl for 2026 and 2027, those two players, I believe, are left out of this ruling.
Oh, I was going to say that specifically, I noticed that they didn't put one specific pro sports league. They didn't put the MLB. And I think someone tweeted it out. I think I responded. I said, "Welcome home, Gunnar Henderson and Colt." Gunnar Henderson and Colt Emerson.
Gunnar, you're hitting 219.
There's nothing in the rules that say that they can't come back and play baseball.
I mean, he still has.
I'm just putting that out there.
Still has the eligibility. Colt Emerson. You want to get Casey Mize to come back?
Sure. I mean, if they got eligibility, if they fit in the 5 for 5, I mean, this technically doesn't say that they can't
or not. Just get a temporary restraining order. Get something
Lee
again,
County
personal.
Judge. Yes.
It can't be a group, but as long as you get one that says your name on it, then that should be the only true issue.
Which, have you heard the rumors? I don't know if this is true. I doing some journalism, I'm going to put allegedly in front of all this, that allegedly Lane Kiffin and the Tigers told multiple players on NFL rosters and their representation to get a lawsuit so that they can try and sue instead of it just being a blanket rule, that Lane allegedly encouraged players to sue the NCAA.
That goes back to talk even more about a comment that I made a couple of weeks ago about how long until schools get involved with lawsuits, rather than getting a judge from Baton Rouge or a judge from wherever this player resides. How long until till Louisiana State University goes to court and tries to plead something? Because just playing devil's advocate, not that I believe in this whatsoever, but for the sake of conversation, if you're Lane Kiffin, if you're Will Wade, you make the case of, okay, well, we were planning on building our roster around this. Now we don't have the guys that we thought we were going to have to be able to compete. You're now punishing us, and that's possibly affecting our wins. That's possibly affecting our postseason. That's possibly affecting our jobs and our salary. And so, again, not that I believe in that whatsoever, but just from the sake of playing devil's advocate, a very interesting thought that, yeah, now Lane Kiffin is personally asking and almost demanding players to go out and get personal lawsuits to try and work their way back into the SEC, back into college football. But what we do know is that there are some punishments, and three of them have been announced by the SEC. 50% of a season suspension for a head coach.
Sure.
50% of that sport's annual operating budget being taken away, and SEC voting privileges revoked on some matters. So, again, that's six games for football if Lane Kiffin were to go about that, and 50% of that sport's annual operating budget. Now, again, with all of the under-the-table money, it'd be interesting to see how that truly plays its way into effect. And it's also at the point of, at that point, if you're making this rule, rather than making it 50% of the head coach, suspend him for the season. Suspend him for, again, like the full time, rather than, okay, but it's only going to be 50%. I know that that's still a lot, but if you want to make a statement without having to truly make a statement, make it to where, yeah, you're on a postseason ban and your coach is done for a year. Almost like what the NFL is doing with players.
Yeah, I think you look, I mean, look at the first game, six games of LSU schedule, Clemson, Louisiana Tech, at Ole Miss. Imagine if he sits there and is suspended and he's like, well, at least I don't have to go to Vaught-Hemingway Stadium.
Oh my gosh.
That would be the ultimate cop-out, point-blank loser move of all time of saying.
They wouldn't allow that because of college game day and because of all the drama. They would make it a six-game suspension, but you have to go coach the Ole Miss game.
Yeah, they would suspend him for the Mississippi State game as well, and then the first two get, and then that gets you to the Auburn game.
Lane Kiffin makes his return
at the Auburn game
for into Jordan-Hare Stadium to start the 2026 season.
Golly.
Wow. Oh, could you imagine?
Could you imagine?
How long until a school does something like that and a coach just willingly, okay, we got to do this to have it. We thought that Texas Tech was possibly going to suffer that punishment of, well, we have to go get a quarterback, whether that's Dylan Raiola, whether that's somebody. We'll pay the fine. We'll basically pay the suspension, but we got to have a chance in 2026. Wild times that we are in. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll dive into some news that broke this morning in terms of Auburn and in terms of Alabama, the Iron Bowl of basketball, and how, I'll save my thoughts. But an exhibition is set to be played in October for these two teams meeting on the hardwood before the season gets started. Feel free to give us a call, 334-321-1390. We'll talk about that, the Iron Bowl of basketball, when we come back.
You're on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton. Be a part of the show by calling 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1685.
Back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, he is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. We also appreciate Jordan Hill for being flexible with our high school coverage this week. He's going to be joining us here in just a few minutes, usually at 2:30, joining us at 3:30 here this afternoon to give us all the insights on the Georgia Bulldogs in Athens with fall camp, picking up with the overall Georgia thoughts on NFL players returning to college. I know that Kirby Smart has had a couple of quotes basically talking about their disinterest in it, even if it were to be legal. And so excited to get Jordan Hill back on the phone lines. It's been a little bit since we've been able to talk and catch up with him. But while we have a few moments, do want to be able to talk about this exhibition that was announced this morning for Auburn and Alabama, again, to meet in an exhibition contest in Birmingham. It's an unprecedented exhibition contest. Auburn and Alabama have agreed to play each other in the feud presented by Ship Same Day Delivery on Thursday, October 22nd at Legacy Arena in Birmingham, and tip is scheduled for 7 p.m. Again, this means that these two teams will play each other a minimum of three times this season. Auburn visits Alabama on January 30th, and then they make their way back to Neville Arena on March 6th to conclude the regular season for the SEC prior to the SEC tournament. Head coach Stephen Pearl says, our goal in scheduling exhibition games is to play quality opponents to test ourselves before the season officially begins. Playing a team like Alabama provides an incredible opportunity to accomplish that goal while obviously giving to our fans, our state, and the entire basketball world a unique opportunity to see two rivals face off at a neutral site. The entire nation will be watching, and we're excited to represent Auburn University and what that unprecedented exhibition will be. It's an almost 18,000 seat arena that will be at least scheduled 50-50, almost Red River style, divided right in half of 9,000 Auburn, 9,000 Alabama. And you can, a ticket pre-sale will run from August 27th to August 31st, while a general public sale goes on Tuesday, September 1st. And there's a lot of NIL, or I guess dollar signs that can be benefited to both programs. I know they've had the caveat if this sells out, which I don't foresee there being any problem on that side of things. Your overall thoughts on what came to your head when you saw this before I give my overall thoughts?
I mean, I think it's interesting. I think it's something that hasn't been done before. I think you look at what Alabama is doing playing, I believe it was Ole Miss to start in the battle at Bronwell or whatever it is. I mean, what it is. Yeah. I think that's really interesting that this game is happening. I know you have thoughts. I don't really have opinion one way or the other. Like, I think it's cool that anytime the environment of what they're describing are cool, it will sell out. It'll be a good opportunity for fans that maybe can't make it down 280 to Auburn or can't make it to Tuscaloosa to be able to watch a game in their home city and grow the footprint. And I'd be very curious to see if this kind of game, if this is a annual thing or a thing that happens, like they do it this year and then next year it's Ohio State, Michigan, or Duke, North Carolina, like, and it's not just Auburn and Alabama. I'd be very curious there to see that. But Christian, I'm just gonna go ahead and give you the floor because I know that you are very strongly opinionated, and then I'll kind of devil's advocate it from there.
If I were to tell you that Auburn and Alabama were playing on a neutral site for an 8A game, people would lose their mind. Playing your rival in a game that doesn't matter makes me want to lose my mind. Basically turning off a scoreboard and going, yep, not even for charity, for the purpose of funding Auburn's basketball team and Alabama's basketball team. Taking off the orange and blue glasses on a moment like this, I do truly understand the idea, and maybe this will settle a little bit as it kind of did for Auburn moving their game to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in week one against Baylor, although I know that has a lot of Auburn fans still under fire, and understandably so. I do understand where this is coming from, the opportunity to bring dollar signs to the programs, to bring attention to basketball in the state of Alabama. But if you're going to do that, just host a statewide tournament. And if Auburn and Alabama end up playing each other, so be it. But to make this a one-off situation, a one-off game, a one-off scenario where you are playing your biggest rival in a game that just simply does not matter, it pisses me off. It fires me off. Maybe just as a competitor, knowing that, like, okay, I'm going to go play the team that I hate the most. I'm going to go play the fan base that I hate the most. Yet afterwards, we're just going to, we're going to be okay with it. We're going to understand that there are dollar signs that we are putting in front of a rivalry game to where, yep, players are probably going to get paid. It helps benefit the future of Auburn and Alabama, which, again, I understand that aspect. But as a competitor, if you're telling me that you basically turn off the scoreboard and you're playing a game that just doesn't mean anything, it doesn't matter, why are you playing it? There needs to be, and I don't know if I truly have time for all of this, but is it not going to play a little bit of a damper into what the two regular season games are going to be? At least the first one inside of Coleman Coliseum, because you've already seen these two teams play. And maybe that'll build even more anticipation because, Auburn won by four or Alabama won by four in the neutral site. So because of this, this team has to step it up and we're going to see the differences. We're going to see how different everybody is right now. But man, that's what the anticipation is for. And then you get that rematch. You're playing a rivalry game that doesn't have an overall meaning towards the season. And as a competitor, it feels like the waste of a game.
Well, Christian, my question to you, first of all, is looking at this, what this can do for Auburn's program, the game does, like, not matter, but what if Auburn is able to go 3-0? Would you be happy with it then?
I'd be more happy that you went 2-0 in the season that actually mattered.
Fair. I mean, I'm playing devil's advocate here. Yeah. I think I agree with you at the end of the day, and I know we got to get out of here because we got Jordan Hill joining of Dogs 247, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow for sure. But I think it's very there's so much high upside and so much low downside. Like, imagine you go 2-1-1 in the regular season. This game suddenly is like, we won the big best of three series. Yay.
I don't know, man. It feels a little bit as if dollar signs are being put in front of the pageantry of the Iron Bowl. And I don't think that that's easy to do because I think it's the best rivalry in the sport. But as soon as fiscal dollars become the biggest problem, I think that's where you have the true problem. Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 joins us next.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
More minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending some time on the Auburn Opelika sports leader. Let's get to the phone lines and talk to a man where it's been quite some time since we've been able to work our way up to Athens and get all sorts of updates on the Georgia Bulldogs. Our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7. Jordan, before we dive into any coverage, any personal news? I know that it's been quite some time since you were on a vacation before fall camp even got going the last time we were able to talk.
Yeah, it's just good catching up with you guys. And no, just chugging right along, getting ready for the start of the season. I always appreciate, you know, it's very rare that an SEC team has a week zero game. So, you know, we kind of get to jump in and be a little bit more like fans this first week before we dive in full go next week. So, no, just excited for this season to get started, and I appreciate you guys having me back home.
Yeah, it feels as if college football understood a couple of years ago that it was like, okay, college football is getting started, yay, but the matchups are just not anything worth watching. Feels like they've understood that and have at least made a couple of decent games to where it gets like the appetizer going for college football starting in week one. Before we dive into the Georgia Bulldog side of things, because I know we have a lot of questions on current dogs as well as former Georgia Bulldogs, got to start with the drama that's working its way around college football and specifically the SEC right now. You maybe hope that there's some answers as the SEC basically says no to any of the former NFL, WNBA, NBA players trying to work their way back to the college game. Your personal thoughts as well as the University of Georgia's. I think that Kirby Smart's had a couple of comments basically showing their disinterest even if this was to be allowed.
Yeah, I think Greg Sankey and the folks in Birmingham, they deserve a lot of credit for coming out and making this decision. I honestly thought early in the week that they might kind of ride this thing out. You know, they basically put out a statement. I think that might have been on Monday, mm-hmm. basically saying that they had acknowledged what was going on and there had been conversations behind the scenes with the athletic directors and the presidents of the different schools. And I think for them to come out and say, look, we're basically not taking any professional players on the basketball side or the football side, I think it's commendable. Now, how's it going to hold up? And I don't know. I imagine this is going to lead to more lawsuits. puts a lot of focus on really football and basketball in Baton Rouge to see what LSU has done. You know, specifically, what matters right now is Lane Kiffin, given how close we are to football season, to see how that all plays out. But no, I appreciate that the league came out, and you know, it sure looks like the other conferences as well. At least the power conferences are all kind of on the same page when it comes to bringing back professional players. And, yeah, we had a chance to talk to Kirby earlier on Tuesday, and this was before the SEC had kind of put out its new policy. And he said that they were not evaluating any current NFL players, any NFL rosters. And he hit on what I think is the biggest point if you are a coach and kind of looking more long-term. He said, you know, we have – had these guys grind through the off season, you know, working to have a role and, you know, putting in the blood, sweat, and tears to get ready for a season. And then, you know, how are you going to turn around again the season? I think Georgia plays 10 days from now. You know, how are you going to bring in somebody else and say, look, you know, you're either farther down the depth chart or however much you thought you were going to play, well, it's not happening now. Mm-hmm. Too, and got a pro player. And, you know, I think you have to keep that in mind. I mean, if I was a coach going against some of these teams doing that, I would bring that up in recruiting to like, hey, you know, they might be selling you this, but look at what they've done and, you know, recruited over guys that thought they were going to have a role this year. So I appreciate what Kirby had to share. And again, we'll see how much this gets challenged as far as what the SEC did, but I do appreciate that they came out and made a stance and kind of fell in line with the rest of the power schools.
Yeah, and a really good point from the recruiting aspect, because Tripp and I have talked a little bit about just the locker room and the troubles that that can bring, because, you know, it's at this point, and maybe 2 weeks ago you were at the point of the every coach in America saying, you know, these are the only guys that we need. Nobody else believes, but all we need is what's in this locker room. But we're also going to get a tight end. We're also going to go get an offensive lineman. You talk about trying to create a little bit of turmoil in the locker room, in the prestige locker room that you have to win football games. It is a really, really good point. And so obviously Kirby not saying any sort of interest in doing something like that. And, I mean, we know that Kirby's as good as a recruiter as well as an on-field coach. And so you talk about just coaching a lot of upcoming NFL players makes things a little bit easier. And what are those guys going on right now? Again, fall camp coming to a close. You continue to work your way. I'm not sure if Georgia's doing the exact same kind of walkthrough mock week that a lot of these teams like Auburn is choosing to do. I'm sure they're doing something along those lines. But what are some of the biggest storylines making their way out of Athens on the football field?
Yeah, they have to start on defense, and it's going to be interesting once they get the season started. Looking at strong safety, it sure looks like Kyron Jones has grabbed that job, and that was a surprise. I have to say that, you know, and a lot of it is injury-related. Kyron was the starting safety for about the first six games last year, along with K.J. Bolden. He had a foot injury, and it cost him the rest of the season, and even in the spring, he was not full go. But credit to Kyron, even with a pitch count in fall camp, by all accounts, it seems he has grabbed that starting strong safety role back, so anticipate seeing him as well as Rayshon Dinkins, who is a sophomore, and we got to see a little bit more of him last year by the SEC title game and the Sugar Bowl. So I think you'll see both of those guys. And then a lot of it is really understanding that there's areas of this team that are still unsettled. We had a chance to talk to Kirby on Tuesday. I asked him about the pass rush because that's such a big point of emphasis. Georgia only had 20 sacks last year, really struggled at getting to the quarterback, and they had some success in their second scrimmage, which was this past Saturday, but asked Kirby if he felt like they were making progress there, and he said that, you know, there's still room for growth, that they are still not where they want to be in terms of pass rush. And part of the issue is Auburn-related. It's losing Amaris Williams that they got from Auburn this offseason, him suffering a knee injury back in the spring. Looks very unlikely that he'll play this season, and even if he does come back, I imagine that would be late in the year. So they're looking to generate pass rush, and they need guys to step up. Guys that make sense to me is names to keep an eye on: Gabe Harris, Quintavious Johnson, Joseph Jonah Janye, Darren Akinigbon. They're really looking for some of those edge position guys to step up and really contribute. And that'll be something to watch as they start the season. Aside from that, they're still kind of looking and trying to decide who they want the backup quarterback to be behind Gunnar Stockton. I believe it's still going to be Ryan Puglisi, at least to begin the season. He's a year older than his top competition, Ryan Montgomery. Puglisi did struggle in the second scrimmage. I reported over on Dogs 24/7. He threw three interceptions, a really tough showing as a guy that was getting an opportunity with the first-team offense, which meant going up against the first-team defense. So I think you'll see a little bit of both Ryan Puglisi and Ryan Montgomery in these first 2 weeks, you know, playing Tennessee State, then playing Western Kentucky. So I think Puglisi still has the edge despite that performance. But, you know, Montgomery might be able to get in these games as well and show that he might be the best option if Gunnar Stockton were to go down.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. And Jordan, speaking and keeping it with the quarterback room, Gunnar Stockton, he goes into his second full year as the starter. We were able to do our quarterback rankings, and we had him very high yesterday. I had him at number three. Christian had him at the top spot, and I think that was a good place for us. What is this staff looking for from Gunnar this season, taking the next step from a good quarterback into one of the best in college football?
Well, I think there are a few areas of his game, and they've honestly been very candid about the things they want to see improved. I think the biggest thing, this has really been a talking point for this entire offense, they want Georgia to be more explosive, and I think that shows up more in the passing game than anything else. But having Gunnar, you know, be willing to take more shots downfield, you didn't see that a ton last year, and I think they really worked on that and harped on it to him look, you're not going to have opportunities where guys are just running wide open. You know, sometimes you have to take a 50-50 shot and count on your receiver to go up and get the football. So interesting to see if he does that. Getting the tight ends more involved. You know, there was a real issue as far as throwing across the middle of the field for Gunner last year. A lot of hesitation, which I think is understandable when you look at a young quarterback. I mean, there's a lot of traffic in that second level of the defense. You know, a lot can go wrong. But he's got an immense amount of talent at tight end. I think the deepest tight end room in the country. They got to do a better job taking advantage of that. They didn't do that last year. And very simply, besides that, I think Gunner just has to do a better job of taking care of himself. He's a guy that's lay it all out there on the line, diving for first downs, no matter if, you know, like they were playing Charlotte last November and he's like fighting for every yard. And I think everybody involved was like, hey, you know, well, let's be a little smart here. Let's not take unnecessary hits. And I say that to say that I think that style, I think that really bit him when you were talking about late in the year, Georgia Tech, SEC title game. I think he was really hurting. I think he was really struggling to get through games. And, I mean, it is a credit to his toughness, but you do have to keep in mind it's a long season. Georgia wants to be playing, you know, 14, 15 games and chasing a championship. So I think those are the biggest things. And I think Gunner's able to take that step. I don't see him as like a Heisman finalist type of quarterback, but you don't need that to win the national championship, which is the goal for Georgia. And I think even if you ask Gunner, hey, he doesn't really care about the individual awards. He wants Georgia to go chase a championship, and I think he's good enough to help them get there.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 here with us on the phone lines, usually at 2:30 on Wednesdays, but here this afternoon, again, as we continue to work our calendar for the fall, joining us today at 3:30. And, Jordan, you are not Kirby Smart. I need to confirm that, correct?
Yeah, luckily, I wish my bank account looked like Kirby.
If that was the biggest complaint, yeah, I think we would be okay. But I do have to ask a question about the wide receivers, and we are not in Tampa, Florida, so I just wanted to get that out of the way, so that way I wasn't going to get called out by Mr. Smart. But we know that that drops have plagued the Georgia Bulldogs over the last handful of years, including leading the country with 36 of them. Again, last year. So we know about Isaiah Kanyon. You know about London Humphreys making their way from Georgia Tech with Kanyon, but Humphreys remaining on the roster. Who are some of the other go-to targets that you've seen Gunner Stockton in this quarterback room really beginning to trust as you make your way towards the start of the season?
Yes, I'm honestly going to be really interesting. I mean, you pointed out Isaiah Kanyon that they got from Georgia Tech, and I think London Humphreys, too, who has, you know, been here going into another season after coming over from Vanderbilt where he started his career. And, you know, what will be interesting with these early games, again, Georgia plays Tennessee State, Western Kentucky, and then at Arkansas, seeing who else gets in the mix. I mean, Sakobe Wyatt-Helton is probably your starting slot receiver. Anticipate seeing a lot of him. The guy that everybody's raving about in practice this week is sophomore Talon Taylor, a guy that we saw a little bit last year, had a really crucial drop in Georgia's loss during the regular season against Alabama. Then he had a collarbone injury, but he's really turned it on lately. Freshman Craig Dandridge looks like he's going to play an important role. You know, looking elsewhere, Landon Roldan has been one of the more explosive receivers in fall camp. He's getting ready for his sophomore year. And then again, I would pay attention to the tight ends. I think your top pass-catching options, Elias Williams, Jaden Riddell, Caden Prothrow, who's another freshman. He was a record-setting receiver at Bowden High School in Georgia. Broke the GHSA record. I mean, rewrote the record book. So they got a lot of options, and that is what I think is helpful with Georgia's schedule. You know, there's not like a marquee early opponent. You're kind of giving these guys a runway to go out and prove themselves. Can they be a factor? Can they go make those plays? And like I talked about a few minutes ago, can they help this offense be more explosive? I like their options in there, but there are quite a few. I'll be very interested to see who kind of separates themselves from the rest of the pack.
Jordan Hill here with us on the phone lines. And my man, one final question before we let you get out of here. Mention the current Georgia Bulldogs, but also a former Georgia Bulldog. And it would be wrong for me to be able to bring you back on the phone lines and not talk about a guy by the name of Nick Chubb, who, again, from Cedartown, Georgia, stayed in state. And Kirby made comments about really changing the trajectory of what Georgia football was and now what Georgia football is. What are some of the biggest quotes and possibly one of the biggest memories that you have and that Georgia fans remember about Nick Chubb?
Yeah, it was honestly, I was very lucky when I was first starting in this business. He actually went to Cedartown, as you mentioned, and my high school, Pickens High School, was in their region. So I got to watch him his junior and senior year of high school, and, wow. and you just knew he was something special. And then getting to watch him in Georgia, too, and not only how he kind of broke out as a freshman in 2014, but his return from injury after hurting his knee in 2015, coming back, having a really good 2016, but more importantly for where Georgia is now, his decision to come back in 2017. And it wasn't just him, Sony Michel, Lorenzo Carter, Davin Bellamy. I think they kind of laid the groundwork for what Georgia became. And, you know, they play for the national title that year. They come up short against Alabama, but they did win the SEC. I believe that was the first time Georgia had won the SEC in 12 years. So, you know, it was great to get to cover some of Mick's career. I think I was there for a couple of his Georgia seasons, and not a big talker, but he was kind of the guy that he let his play do the talking. And then to see what he did in the NFL, too, I mean, very much the bright spot for a Cleveland franchise that, you know, still can't really seem to find its way. Four-time Pro Bowler, just all-around good guy. And, yeah, I hated to see that he retired, but, you know, Nick, I think especially for Georgia fans this century, he's up there. He's got a case for, you know, Mount Rushmore, especially, you know, when you look at the long line of running backs, and even while he was there, Todd Gurley himself, Sony Michel, he was part of a very special era of Georgia football. And I know a lot of Georgia fans have been taking the last few days watching some of those highlights. He was certainly a special player.
Wait, so Jordan, just to clarify, you said you're from Pickens County, so you were a Pickens County Dragon?
Yes, I was.
That's hilarious. My old high school, where my brother plays, played them this past Friday night. So Eagles got a big win over Pickens. Sorry to tell you that. I just had to mention it. Shout out North Cobb Christian Eagles, baby.
Yeah, well, if they won, that tells you that they've got to be a quality program. Not very many teams are beating Pickens. Now, don't go check the sports books. They've been better now than when I was growing up.
There you go.
You can pretty much count on both hands. In my 4 years, they might have won like 9 games, but they got a lot better, I'll say that.
Man, if only they had you at quarterback, it would have been a completely different story. Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 here with us on the phone lines, my man. We appreciate, again, your flexibility, you joining us here again, giving us all the insight. I know that we'll continue to talk throughout the fall, throughout college football season. But up until we do, let everybody know all of your coverage, where they can find you personally, professionally as well, for all of your coverage on Dogs 24/7.
Definitely, dogs247.com on Twitter, at Jordan Davis Hill on Twitter, at dogs247. Still got a 60% off sale going on, so if you want to sign up for your Georgia fan, listen to this, go to dogs247.com. But I also want to shout out Auburn 24/7, my friends Jason Caldwell, Nathan King, Christian Clemente. If you're an Auburn fan, they got the same deal going, so go sign up for that. They do such a fantastic job covering Auburn. And before too long, guys, we're going to turn around and we'll be talking about a Georgia-Auburn game. So hope the folks that are listening are excited for the season, that they go sign up for one of our two sites. And again, 60% off. You know you want to talk about college football right now. Great time to join. And super excited to get this season going.
2 p.m. inside Samford Stadium, Georgia, and Tennessee State in Georgia. I do apologize. The Dogs went from 47.5-point favorites down to 44.5-point favorites. And so you can do that information with what you will.
Yeah, I'll definitely let Kirby know that on Monday. I'm sure he'll be thrilled.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, there's no way else to make him really happy on a Monday. Jordan, we appreciate you. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Again, Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 with us on the phone lines. Usually our every Wednesday 2:30 guest, but with the fall schedule that we have continuing to be concreted into fruition, going to find a way, the best way to get Jordan Hill, because we still think it's very valuable to give his insight and get all the information going on in Athens, Georgia. We'll take a break. We will come back and we will wrap up the Wednesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Christian Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Back here wrapping up the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 for taking some time to join us from Athens, Georgia. Three wonderful guests here this afternoon. In hour number one, got to talk with Coach Jacob Osmonds, head coach of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors. Tripp was able to speak with Coach Keith Etheridge of the Auburn High Tigers to give all of our high school updates in hour number one. Here in hour number two, we got to talk a little bit about the SEC rulings of no NFL players, no professional players. I guess I should say no American professional players. Again, the little caveat did not mention anything about the European pros. And so we'll see what that continues to look like for any of the basketball players on Auburn and throughout the country on their schedule, or on their roster, rather, for the 2026-27 season. Also got to talk about the Iron Bowl of basketball part exhibition statewide game is set to be played in late October between the Tigers and the Tide. Both basketball programs will be benefited. Gave our thoughts on that. We'll be able to dive into a lot more of those tomorrow afternoon. But again, appreciate everybody for being here with us. A reminder, tune in to Wings 94.3 as soon as they are done with the drive. Tiger Talk underway at 6 p.m. live from the Supper Club. And so make sure to tune in Wings 94.3 if you can't make your way out there to get all of your thoughts, get all of your updates on all things Auburn Athletics. Should be a really fun time.
Yeah. Head out to the graduate War Eagle Supper Club. I know there's probably a lot of people listening that would remember the other one. It was not open when I was here, so I cannot tell you about it. But I'm sure you know kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network will be there. He'll be joining us at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon as well. Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast, as we continue to catch you down to the start of week zero, high school football season in there as well. He's Tripp Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. Appreciate everybody for spending some time with us today. Sports are so much better with an opinion, whether you love them, whether you hate them. We're back tomorrow to talk all about them, and we hope you'll be there to join us.